step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
When the world is calling, getting there starts here. With over 55 nonstop destinations, including Montreal, and 20 nonstop flights a day to New York City, travel from Columbus is closer than you think. Start your trip at FlyColumbus.com.
The gunshot woke us up. It felt like someone snapped their fingers inside my ear canal. While my parents were away for the weekend celebrating their anniversary, I stayed with Kimmy next door. Since Kimmy was a year older, her dad would let us stay up as late as we wanted. Her mom left when she was young, and she didn't like talking about it. We stayed up watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer until about 1 a.m. My parents would never let me watch stuff like that because they thought it was of the devil or something. I didn't understand why it was so evil, but I didn't get to make the rules. The gunshot echoed through the house at 3:34 a.m. Kimmy and I jolted awake and looked at one another. "Was that a gunshot?" Kimmy asked. We crowded around her window to see if something was happening outside, but the view from her bedroom window was of her backyard. It seemed peaceful as the swing swayed in the wind. I suggested we check another window. Kimmy shook her head because she thought her dad would want us to stay put in case something dangerous happened. I told her I was going to look. I started towards her bedroom door, and Kimmy followed close behind, begging me to stay put. "I'm just going to look out a window that overlooks the street. I'm sure something happened outside. It was so loud, it felt like it came from inside the house." I assured her it was probably fine. After all, her dad locked all the doors and windows before we went to bed. In the darkness, we heard two people quietly bickering. Kimmy's protest became more urgent as she insisted we return to her bedroom. I followed the hushed voices to the stairs that led down to the foyer. I peered around the corner and saw a growing puddle of dark blood at the foot of the stairs. I couldn't see where, or better yet, who the blood was coming from. The bickering increased in volume slightly. "You said the house would be empty." "I thought it would be. The couple said they were going to the mountains for the weekend and that their daughter would be with one of their neighbors." "Well, clearly you are wrong, because who is this man?" I stepped down one stair to see if I could see more of the banister. Kimmy tried to pull me back, but I shook her off. Through the beams, I saw Kimmy's dad stiff on the floor with his eyes open, not blinking. His chest was covered in blood, dripping off him towards the front door. The bickering pair were both dressed in black, each holding large bags. "This is your fault. You were supposed to pick an empty house, so you clean up your mess. You didn't have to kill him. We could have just knocked him out. This is what we get for letting you carry a gun. I'll go look for valuables." I backed up the stairs to Kimmy, who kept asking what I saw. I couldn't bring myself to answer. I knew she couldn't see what had happened. "You were right. We should stay in your bedroom. Or better yet, do you have a guest room? We need to hide." "Why? What's happening? What didn't you see?" "I'll tell you later. But we really need to hide right now. There are people here and I think they're going to rob you. We don't have any phones to call the police, so we need to hide until they leave. I don't think getting in their way is a good idea." Kimmy stopped asking questions and led me to the guest room. The bed was a queen, so we could both fit under it, whereas Kimmy's was a twin. We thought it would be best if we stayed together. We crawled under the bed. Fortunately, the room looked like Kimmy's grandma decorated it, so the bed had a white lace bed skirt that concealed us. We positioned ourselves to face the door. Moonlight streamed in from the windows onto the floors. The door would open, it would cast a shadow we would have seen. Neither of us dared to move or speak. Kimmy kept holding her breath to be as quiet as she could, but then would gasp for air. I looked at her, put my fingers to my lips, then pointed at my nose. "Just breathe through your nose slowly. They won't be able to hear." She nodded, and tears began to gather in her brown eyes. I wanted to tell her that we would be okay and get through this, but I didn't want to risk saying something and being overheard. We heard one of them opening drawers and doors, rustling through everything. Every now and again, the ransacking would be interrupted by an abrupt thud of something heavy. I knew it was Kimmy's father, but I couldn't tell her yet. She would become hysterical, and we needed to stay hidden until we could find a phone to call for help. The door to the guest room swung open, casting a shadow in the moonlight. We saw heavy black boots through the white bedskirt. Kimmy covered her mouth with her hand. I froze to the point that it was hard to breathe. The robber began to open all the drawers. He went into the closet and checked every piece of clothing and every pocket, as if Kimmy's dad was hiding a diamond necklace in his winter jackets. The man dropped down to his stomach and lifted the skirt. I slapped my hand over my mouth to contain my gasp. Kimmy jumped, hitting her head on the bottom of the bed. I grabbed her hand and the robber looked at us. He looked at us for a moment, debating what to do. Then he lifted his index finger over his lips and nodded at us. He slowly put down the bed skirt, got up, and left the room. The robber continued to rummage through Kimmy's home. We weren't sure when they left. We were too scared to come out from under the bed until the morning sun replaced the soft moonlight. We came out and I explained to Kimmy what I saw. She ran downstairs looking for her dad, but couldn't find him. I looked around for a phone to call 911 and my parents, but they must have taken Kimmy's dad's phone or destroyed it. I decided to go to the neighbors across the street to ask to use their phone. The cops came and opened an investigation. They were able to catch the robbers because they tracked Kimmy's dad's phone. The one who confused houses forgot to turn it off while dealing with the body. Both men were arrested. Kimmy ended up moving in with her grandparents. I still see her occasionally, but not as often as when she was next door. It's hard to shake the guilt from that night, because the robbers meant to hit my house. If they hadn't messed up, Kimmy would still have her dad.
Happiness often came cheap, but it was never free. When my friends came together after long months of being away overseas, just as I had been for work, we gathered and drank to be merry. For what it cost, a few dollars, those nights were mostly the best of the year for all three of us, Luca, Jason, and I. We always drank strong, and perhaps, if I had been more attentive to the fact that Jason never drank the entire night, this story might have had a different end. I had asked twice, in the usual way that we caught up with each other, a nudge to the shoulder and a flick of the head, if Jason was okay. He smiled at me and nodded. I didn't think much of it. It had been months since we had caught up, and we had the days ahead of us for up to a week to discuss whatever it was that was troubling him. I asked for booze, and there was much for us to drink. It wasn't long before I was absolutely hammered drunk. Luca was also drunk, and I could tell because in my inebriation, I could see him singing at the top of his voice, loud in the bar. I thought it was funny, so I laughed about it. Jason simpered. I saw, but it was one of those brief ones that were gone before one could acknowledge it in such a state as I was. "You know you can't drive home like this," Jason queried me, and I protested him, feigning sobriety, but he dismissed me with the wave of his hand. "I was in no shape to drive," he maintained. "You'd have to sleep over at my house, and by morning, we'll come get your car." I said my thank you, and the rest of the night at the bar went by in a dreamy blur. I didn't remember the drive, but I recalled Jason heaving me up the flight of stairs to his apartment, and how he helped me maintain my balance by placing his hands over my shoulders so I never plastered my face against the wall in the wobbling. I had also been too drunk to rein in my thoughts when I asked him why he had such a grave countenance all evening. He said it was nothing at first, perhaps assuming I was too drunk to understand him. But when I too maintained some sense of focus despite how desperately I clinged to clarity, he told me about a small problem. Jason said he felt as though he were being followed by someone. I was perplexed. "Do you owe anybody some money?" I asked, tumbling into the couch. He said he didn't, and he had no idea how he must have attracted attention from a stalker. I drifted into a plane of unconsciousness when he started to narrate the detail further, and only heard him say this person was a short, burly man. Spoken to the police? I asked when I sensed he had stopped talking. He said he hadn't because he wasn't sure yet. A bilious ball of lukewarm puke slimed up my throat and I felt the urge to use the bathroom quickly. I spun around and rushed to the bathroom. With my head over the bowl, I turned numb. I can't recall how long I was in that position with the door shut, but when I finally awoke from my slumber, my neck hurt. The smell of my vomit all over the toilet seat wafted into my nostrils, and it made my tongue dry. Damn, I muttered, registering where I was. My bones creaked when I tried to move, and I could not bring myself to flush the toilet. I yowled quietly and dragged myself to my feet with all of the strength I could manage. I sauntered from the bathroom into the bedroom, which was in such a state of dishevelment, it made me recoil in shock. I cussed a few times, thinking to myself that I must have caused the hell in the room and how much it would cost me to fix it for Jason. The wardrobe was slightly open, and I saw the specter of a figure crouched over beside it. I suspected it was Jason trying to play a trick on me, and I refused him the satisfaction of me getting rattled. I staggered to the living room, and there he was. Jason, lying on the table with a huge knife pinning his solar plexus into the table. I retched when I noticed his ginger hair scraped from his scalp, leaving a bloodless network of tissue around his head. My stomach sank. It was a nightmare, I hoped. I held my hand up and pinched my skin, but it hurt. I almost groaned in pain before it struck me that someone else was in the house. My instinct pricked me to escape, but I was rooted to the floor. I knew there was one more of you gingers in this house. I saw you come in too. The absolute monster of a man with yellow eyes stormed out from his hiding place. I had no time to express my confusion when he at once drew out the same type of knife he had killed Jason with. What? Who are you? I whimpered, falling backwards, all the cogs in my head spinning out of the machinery. This is Christmas to me. Two ginger heads in one night? I'll be a rich man. He smiled and started to stalk me around the living room. I quivered from sheer terror, limbs and arms swinging around as dread crept up my spine. I couldn't tell if it was the horror that made me so clear-headed, but I was drenched in so much panic in that moment that nothing mattered but my survival. Don't duck me. I'll give you mercy kill, his crazed mouth revealed. I just need the head and I'll be a rich man. His clarity, despite his madness, made me consider if running away from such a dangerous beast was worth it. But I had seen what he had done to Jason. I could not imagine myself killed with such a savage intent. Because a madman thought the head of gingers in some strange ritual would make him into a rich man. Jason. My friend's name rang in my head and made me so angry that the man who had killed him still haunted me. Throw that knife and end this! I hollered at him, trying to be calm in defiance of the utter dread that ravaged my entire being. For some reason, crazy as this monster was, he aimed his knife at me and swung. The blade cut right past my ear, missing me by a few centimeters. I was beside myself with rage when the blade banged on the wall and fell onto the floor. He lunged at me, coming after the knife. I went down to the floor and grabbed it first, running it straight into his chest before he could land on his feet. He growled, and I pushed the blade deeper and wider across his flesh until he meowed, fainting to the floor. I touched nothing else in the room but my phone, and I called the emergency number. An ambulance came up in a... But they were both dead. It was not until Jason and the monster had been taken away that I realized the full extent of what had just happened. The cops told me I had just killed a maniac who was on a murdering spree of redheads, murdering 5 people as far as they could count.
My husband Dave was a businessman. He was a great provider, but I barely saw him. He spent long hours in the office, and about once a month he'd go on business trips all over the country. I loved him more than anything, but after a few years of marriage, he was starting to feel like a stranger. Last summer, he came home one day and said that he'd be gone for a week. He needed to meet with distributors in Missouri. Normally, I wouldn't put up much of a fight, but our anniversary was that week. I didn't want him to be away on our anniversary. I asked him if he could cancel, but he refused. After a bit of arguing, I realized that he'd completely forgotten about our anniversary. I was furious. He said that his secretary Jane was supposed to remind him of important dates, but that wasn't any excuse. He should be able to remember our anniversary without getting help from the office. He hugged me and said he'd make it up to me when he got back. And to show that he meant business, he called his office and told his secretary that she was fired for what she did. He smiled at me as if he'd done something really chivalrous. I was disgusted. I didn't care about his secretary forgetting to remind him. This had nothing to do with her. This was about our marriage and how he didn't take it seriously. So then he called the spa that I really liked and set up an appointment for me on the day of our anniversary. There, he said. Is that better? No, it wasn't, but I was done arguing with him. I pretended to be happy and said, "Yes, dear, I love you." The next Monday, he left for his flight to Missouri. He didn't even wake me up to say goodbye. He just left a note on his side of the bed. I spent that whole day alone in the house, trying to figure out what I was going to do. I didn't want to leave my husband, but I also didn't want to keep living this way. Dave always chose work over me, and I hated that. I invited a few friends over, and we spent the day in the pool. Then Tuesday rolled around. It was our official anniversary. I called the spa and told them to cancel my appointment. I wasn't in the mood to leave the house. I just wanted to stay at home and sort through my feelings. I cooked a bit, cleaned out some of my old dresses from the closet, and watched a couple TV shows. I also drank a lot. By the time night rolled around, I was pretty drunk, and I still hadn't figured out what I was going to do about my marriage. I guess I dozed off for a bit on the couch, but I woke up to the sound of footsteps coming from behind me. Someone was inside my house. For a second, I thought that Dave had come back home to surprise me. But when I turned around to look, I gasped. Dave's secretary, Jane, was standing behind me. Her face was twisted in an evil grin, and she had a single kitchen knife in her hand. "What are you doing here?" I asked. "Where is he?" she shouted. I assumed she was talking about Dave, so I said, "He's on his business trip. You should know this." She cackled, as if I'd said the dumbest thing in the world. "He doesn't have a business trip. He's probably off visiting Sarah or Monique."
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I had no idea who Sarah or Monique was. This didn't make any sense. "No," I said. "He's in Missouri."
"That jackass would never set foot in Missouri," she said. "He's cheating on me again. For years, I've done everything he's asked me, and what do I get for it? He throws me away like garbage. He fires me over the phone."
You've been sleeping with him?" I asked.
"Of course," she screamed. "I've ignored the other women, and I've ignored you, that harpy wife. But now I've had enough."
And with that, she dove at me. I couldn't believe it. On one hand, I'd always been suspicious of Dave's long nights in the office, but I told myself that he was a good man, he was loyal. But I guess I was wrong. I stood on the other side of the couch so she couldn't reach me, but she jumped over it and grabbed me by the shirt before I could dive out of the way. She shoved me onto the floor. She was a normal-sized woman, but she was surprisingly strong.
Either she spent a lot of time at the gym, or pure rage was making her stronger. She sat on my chest and pressed her forearm into my neck. With one hand, she raised the knife ready to stab me.
Wait!
I choked out. I could barely breathe, but I needed to say something. I needed to reason with her.
What have I done? Why are you mad at me?
She laughed again. I came here to kill him for what he did, but since he's not here, you'll do just fine. The dutiful, oblivious wife. Look at your house. He's given you the world. It's not fair.
Please, I said. Don't you see that we're both victims here?
Nice try.
Think about it,
I said.
He's cheating on both of us. Let's team up.
I don't know why I said that. The words just came out. But they seemed to work. Jane stopped pressing against my neck. She still clutched the knife like she was ready to stab me, but she pulled back.
Get off me, I said, and let's talk.
She stood up. I could tell she still didn't trust me, but she was open to listening. She walked over to the couch and sat down. She patted the cushion next to her, inviting me to sit with her. As I joined her, she grabbed my half-finished bottle of wine and started drinking. No funny business, she said. If you try to stop me in any way, I will kill you. Once I sat down, I realized that my cell phone was sitting on the cushion right next to me. Making sure that Jane didn't notice, I reached over and turned down the volume. Then, with one hand, I dialed 911. I asked Jane to explain what she planned to do to my husband. And while my phone was connected to the police dispatch, Jane started talking. She admitted to wanting to kill Dave. She talked about how she snuck into the house and was ready to stab him to death. I was very careful with what questions I asked her. I made sure that she admitted to attacking me. I made her list off all the times Dave slept around so that her motivation would be clear. And I even made her say her full name. I kept her talking for a long time, until she finally lost patience. And will you help me? She asked. Will you help me kill him? I wasn't going to kill anyone, and I definitely wouldn't admit to planning a murder with the police listening in on the phone. But I also couldn't tell her no, because she still had the knife. She could still kill me if I said anything wrong. So I said, tell me exactly what you want from me. I figured that was non-committal enough. She started laying out the plan. She said that we could both wait for him to come home. I could greet him on the second floor, and then she could run out and shove him down the stairs. That way, it would look like an accident. And she finished with, what do you say? Are you in? At that point, I had no idea what to say. But, thankfully, that was the exact moment when the police pushed open the front door and ran inside. Jane tried to put up a fight, but they grabbed her and knocked the knife out of her hand. As they dragged her out of the house, she screamed at me, how could you? You hate him as much as I do! Don't worry, I said. He'll get what's coming to him. Afterwards, a policeman sat me down and got my full statement. I asked him if they'd recorded the full 911 call. He said that they did. I asked if I could get a copy of the recording. He looked at me strangely, but he said yes. The next day, I took the audio file, cut out the parts where Jane listed off all of Dave's affairs, and sent that recording to all his business contacts. I posted it on his Facebook. Then, I went upstairs and packed all Dave's clothes into a suitcase. By the time he came back home, I told him to get out of the house. We've been going through divorce proceedings ever since. It's not over yet, but it looks like I'll get the house and half his money. Like Jane, I wanted to punish my husband for what he did. But I went about it the right way. My name's Janice, and I'm 27 years old. Some time ago, I opened a TikTok account. I love to sing, and I mostly uploaded videos of my vocal performances. I was surprised to see how much positive feedback and likes I was getting.
A few haters here and there, but I guess that was to be expected. One day I received a letter. I mean, a good old-fashioned letter right in my mailbox. The name of the sender simply stated, "From a fan." And there was no address. The letter said,
"I love your voice. It does wonders for me. It's pure magic."
In theory, this was a nice message, but I was genuinely frightened. Because this unknown person knew my address, and I had no idea why or who that person was, and what intentions he or she had towards me. That night, I told my boyfriend Carl about it. There are lots of people out there on the internet who have ways to capture our addresses. It's the price to pay for going public, Janice, he said.
Are you saying this is my fault, creating a TikTok account? Of course not. I'm simply stating how things work.
Listen, I'll put some security cameras around the house. In any case, I think you should wait a few weeks before uploading more videos, my boyfriend said. And I agreed, of course. Carl and I were living together, and he acted like a real husband. Next day, there were cameras all over the house, capturing the surroundings. I felt safer. I didn't upload any more videos, but I was still checking out those that were already there. And I read a specific comment in a few of them.
"Sad that you're not sharing more of your magical voice. It does wonders for me."
It was from someone who had the nickname Male Mermaid. I assumed it had to be the same person who sent me the letter. The words were similar. I told my boyfriend. "Well, maybe it's just some lonely and harmless guy. Doesn't seem to be angry. He's probably needy. Hopefully he'll find someone or something else to keep him entertained," Carl said, showing his usual optimism, which I love, but sometimes he can be careless. I was scared and decided to simply terminate my TikTok account. I thought that would make things easier for Male Mermaid. One night, my boyfriend and I were getting ready to go out. We were heading to a rock concert. But Carl was acting strange, as if his mind was somewhere else. "Carl, are you fine? You seem to be off. Do you want to stay home instead?" I asked. No, I'm just tired. I look forward to the concert. We've been waiting for it since a few months now. It'll be good for us. Have fun. Get out of the house." "Yeah," he said. "Okay, if you still want to go, great," I replied. We went to the concert, but I couldn't get my eyes off of my boyfriend. There was something unsettling about him, but I wasn't able to tell what. You know, like, my sixth sense was speaking to me, but I had no idea what it was. I assumed I was still stressed out about Male Mermaid, and probably that was also what was going on with Carl, and he simply didn't want to worry me about his own concerns. When we were returning home, Carl was driving, I realized my boyfriend was taking a different road. "Where are we going, Carl? Do you need to stop at some place to get something?" I asked. "Yes, dear, I do. Don't worry, it won't be long."
"Where?"
"Carl, you're scaring me now. You're not acting like yourself. The whole night I felt this way." "Well, that's because I'm not Carl. I'm
the Male Mermaid."
"What kind of sick joke is this? Carl, stop the car. Let's talk," I shouted.
"We're almost there, dear. Almost there,"
Carl said with a numb, almost spacey voice. I was screaming. I was so shocked and terrified that I didn't know what else to do. I couldn't jump out of the moving car or attack Carl. Both could be fatal.
"Don't scream, my dear. Sing. Your voice, it does wonders for me,"
Carl said. At this point, I stopped screaming and just felt like I was in a bad dream and fell asleep from exhaustion. When I woke up, I was lying in a bed. Inside a bedroom that was completely alien to me. At least there was a lamp, which meant that I could see. The bedroom was small, with only one bed. I got up and tried to open the door. It was locked. I started punching the door and screaming.
"What's going on? Carl! At least tell me what's happening! I can't take this anymore! Carl!"
Someone answered from the other side of the door.
"Hello, Janice. Carl's asleep now. He was very helpful, although he wasn't acting on his own will."
"Who are you? What do you want?"
"I'm Male Mermaid. I call myself like that because I'm enchanted by wonderful female voices. In ancient times, mermaids used to sing in order to seduce and trap sailors. This time it's a little different. I trapped you because I'm seduced by your voice. I was able to hypnotize Carl. It wasn't hard, I just had to wait for the right moment. You see, I'm a skilled and powerful hypnotist, and like I said, your voice does wonders for me. I'm a tormented soul, Janice. I need you, the man said.
If you're a tormented soul, get some therapy. Just let me out of here, and my boyfriend too, I shouted.
No, not until I find someone else who has the same effect as you. Till then, you'll sing for me. I will allow you to leave the bedroom, of course, for all basic reasons, but you will behave and do as I say, or your boyfriend will die. I can make him kill himself. Not even the police could accuse me of murder. Now, start singing.
Right now!
I need my peace of mind. I need your voice, the disturbed man said.
I didn't have much of a choice. At least for the moment, I had to do what the man ordered, so I started to sing.
Ah, excellent. Thank you. Keep going. A few more minutes, the man said,
and so I did, which was Male Mermaid's mistake. Although I could not see things beyond the door, I heard noises. I heard my boyfriend shouting, insulting, and beating Male Mermaid.
Janice, I'm gonna get you out of there. Don't you worry, my love.
Carl's voice, his real voice, felt like the most beautiful song I had ever heard. Carl unlocked the bedroom and I got out. My boyfriend had beaten the shit out of the mermaid until he lost his consciousness. For sure, the police would understand that, as we immediately informed the authorities. It wasn't hard to identify the address and the location, thanks to some letters that we found in the house, and of course the GPS. Male Mermaid was a middle-aged man, bald, fat, with small rat eyes. He was taken into custody. We warned the police about his hypnotizing skills. Ironically, it was precisely my singing that allowed Carl to enter a trance-like state of mind whenever he would start hypnotizing his victims. Huh. I guess Male Mermaid was right. My voice did end up being magical. But not the way that he expected, fortunately.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.